You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Good evening and welcome to Journeys with JP, and indeed with Rebecca. Tonight we are continuing the discussion where I'm prizing a whole bunch of new angles of information out of the depths of Rebecca's cosmic archives. All of her expression and her experiences has brought her to a point of understanding that I would like to be able to present to the world. So, Rebecca Jernigan, good evening.
Good evening. Your opening sounds very familiar.
Very familiar.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize I was supposed to be on the air. You know, like, you know, because I'm in that automatic mode, right? After 12 years, I've had that music for 12 years. Somebody said it was old as dirt. It is.
Oh, the intro. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have tried to change my intro many times and I cannot change it. It just doesn't work for me. I've changed a lot of other things, but I can't change my intro music.
Really? So, really?
Yeah. It's fascinating.
I'm very honored that you're happy that I can continue using this, because I hope that I'm carrying the same kind of flag that you've been carrying for a while. And so, I'm very cognizant of the fact that this is your show. This is like a spin-off, like Frasier or something like that.
It's all good, man. Yeah. It's all good. Seriously, it's beautiful. And thank you. And, you know, JP, you've done a beautiful job in the way that you present what you present. And, you know, not that I'm any kind of expert, because I'm not. But, yeah, thank you for that. It's all good.
You are the expert on the Journeys program.
Well, I guess one could say that.
If there's going to be anyone, you know, anyone on the planet, it's got to be you, hasn't it? It's a logical conclusion. So, the journey has taken you, eventually, took you to the Great Pyramid in Giza.
It did.
All these things leading up to it, all the threads. During the daytime, I'm sure these things have been flashing back at you, and speaking to you. So, I'd just like you to express, you know, the sort of things that have been coming up for you, really.
Well, you know, I want to announce that tomorrow night I'm doing a show. I'm not doing a show. I am going to be on a show, much like I'm on your show tonight. With Alpha Ra and Sean Clark, and it's about walk-ins, and I being one. And some of that ties in with the Egypt thing. Matter of fact, a lot of it ties up with the Egypt thing. So I want to make sure that I don't share the information that is going to be talked about tomorrow night, because it'll be taken out of context.
No spoilers.
From one show. Yeah, well, it's not really a spoiler. It'll be taken out of context about what the experience in Egypt was all about, because it's got multi-levels. Everything's got multi-levels to it. You know, nothing is just one or two-dimensional. There's many dimensions to any experience, any thought, any voice, anything. There's just multi-dimensions to it, levels. So, but I do want to say this. You know, I have a tendency to get caught in a stream. When somebody says something, it opens up a door, and and I wanted to go through that door. And one of the doors that I want to go through with you tonight has to do with some of the people that I've had as guests on my show. I mean, that's where this kind of started the other night when I was on. And those doors opening, you know, I'm pretty fearless. And I never looked at these people, the people that had, again, the established names. They were known for whatever field they were in. Didn't matter to me if they had a PhD or whatever behind their name. To me, it was the individual that I was speaking with. I wasn't speaking to his degree or her degree. I wasn't speaking to all the other accomplishments or what academia, school of study they went to, right, or any of that. It was about whatever the information was that was being presented is what I was taught. I was talking to the person in regards to that arena, whatever it was that they wanted to share with the world, right? And through the years, and you were privy to some of this, through the years, there's been a lot of information that has come out about Egypt. And, you know, what it really represents, where did the capstone go, who really built it? I mean, gosh, look at all the shows on TV. Millions and millions of shows, I swear, at least hundreds, perhaps even thousands of shows about the suppositions of who built the Great Pyramids and where they are lying to and what do they really represent and, you know, all kinds of theories. But met a gentleman by the name of Jerry Cannon. Jerry.
And he's a man, right? His story is not finished. I mean, we didn't even actually get to the point. Bless his heart, is, you know, he needs a few shows. He needs one of these kind of extended interview things. So we'll have to do that with him soon again.
You know,
but go on, yeah.
Well, he contacted me after I got back again. Very interesting, but I did a pre-recorded interview with him, I think, is what that was. Wasn't that what that was we did? And you were the engineer of it.
Yeah, we did it early in the evening, but we ran out of time to do it because the actual show had to be broadcast. And he was still talking, but we had to just stop it. So, sorry, Jerry, honestly, we have to go.
I remember you sweating it, going, you know, I've only got like 3 minutes. I've got to keep this up. You were all like, dang, oh, my God, I got to do this. Yeah, it was fun.
I wanted to go one station, yeah.
Yeah, and we never did finish it. But this man, was probably the most amazing man. And I've talked to a few. You know, I had Mr. Baval on. He's, you know, talked about the Egyptian code and the pyramid code. Robert Baval. There's been a couple of others that's come on. You know, even Dr. Pruitt spoke a little bit about the Egyptian connection with the Anunnaki and the Great Pyramids, right? That kind of thing. And then other people through the years have been on, some of the people that were actually talking about the whole process of the whole 2012 and what that really represents. And they, you know, brought in information about Egypt and the Great Pyramids and et cetera and so forth. So there was just a ton of people who through the years have contributed and built to the story. And Jerry, oh my gosh, you know, once we got a hold of Jerry, Jerry Cannon, I don't remember exactly when that was. Was it like last September or October or something?
Something like that. But, you know, this guy was, he came in. Now, this guy, he's a Jewish bloke from the East End, right? Now, East End Jewish, he's like my uncle kind of thing. You know, I've got uncles. He sounds like my uncle. Is like a trader, market trader, and he buys and sells carpets and things like that. So he goes out to the Middle East, and you know, he was stationed there in the Second World War. So he had various contacts that he had that enabled him to go out there and do trading later, and that also connected him in with the pyramid. And was he stationed inside one of the pyramids or something like that?
You know, I can hear myself way in the background.
Yeah. Sorry, don't worry. As soon as I start talking, I'll fade you down. I'll fade me down.
Okay. So, you know, the story, what, and he does, he tells us that he gets into places that nobody else can get into. Now, whether he was stationed there or what, I can't remember that whole story, because really, believe it or not, I have slept since then. And, you know, and it's just one of those things. But that being said, you know, he gave information about him being inside something that I guess you and, you know, you or I or any of most of the general public would never have gotten to see. And I will tell you is that our guide over there took us places that were not open to the public. They were on the same, they were in the same location as some that were. But you see, what people don't understand is about all of these places that are being excavated, they aren't excavating all of them, the whole area. They've only gotten to a certain point, and there's a ton more, you know, in these complexes that still haven't been excavated. And when I was there, there was very little of that going on some of these sites. So we did get to see some of those things that some of the general public does not get to see. And but Jerry's story was is that he was inside a lot of these. I think he was even talking about tunnels, was he not, JP?
That's right. Everything, you know. He knew Hawass personally. You know, the director of antiquities in Egypt, in Cairo. He knew. You know, he would walk into their offices. Like, you know, he had this amazing charisma that. It's just a very natural thing for people to allow him in. I mean, you know, just one of those people who could step in anywhere. Anyway, so go on.
So you know, he kept telling us stories about, and his actually started the weirdest thing about Jerry Cannon's story was he was actually on the search for the Holy Grail and what the Holy Grail was. You remember that?
The Ark of the Covenant.
Ark of the Covenant, that's right.
Yeah, his Holy Grail was the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant. And this was all at the same time as I was messing about with plasma. I was, you know, very deeply researching, you know, plasma in space, plasma as part of the sun, and then all these different properties of plasma, this electric arc thing, and the origin of the word arc and spark, and the whole connection of being able to transmit sound through a spark. You can actually buy very high-end tweeters that have a spark jumping across this gap, and the sound comes out of the spark. The spark is modulated, and the sound comes through absolutely crystalline clear through this tweeter. You know, it's a hi-fi unit, and it's made of a spark. So we know that a spark can transmit sound. We know that a spark is incredibly bright. We have to wear special protective clothing and protective eye gear. Presumably they would use a very dark crystal or something like that to make, you know, special eyeglasses that the high priest had to wear. We also know that in the great chamber of the pyramid, the king's chamber of the pyramid, there is this very curious setup where there is a great big block of stone and this kind of walkway where you have to kind of crawl underneath. You have to bow right down, and then you get into the big chamber. And I surmised at that time that it's because there's a great big bright light going on in the big chamber that everybody would stand outside while this thing was going on, because it was just so bright nobody could look into it. You would blind yourself, and also you'd get a massive sunburn from the ultraviolet light. Ah, and we also learned that it was produced by sound. The whole thing was like a huge crystal lighter. So I learned all these things, and at the same time as you know, I even burned myself with the plasma spark, you know, just to kind of remind me, just burn it into my skin. Oh yes, I've still got a scar there. You know, just to remind me of all of that. arc stuff.
Yeah. You know, so I have to say is that, you know, after listening to Jerry and his very compelling story, and what did we get? A little over 2 hours with him? And then we both had private conversation. I don't know, did you even, I think you might have even had him on your show after that, did you not?
I wanted to, but I didn't. We seem to have lost Revolution Radio just for a second.
Yes, we have.
So let me just drop that and bring them back up again.
All right, everyone. JP, take it away.
Yeah, well, anyway, meanwhile, we were talking about pyramid technology. Why didn't you like us talking about pyramid technology? What's wrong with having a spark in the middle of the pyramid at the midway between third point, you know, one-third harmonic? That's what it's about. It's the one-third harmonic, which is the first harmonic, the perfect fifth. And that's where you put your vibrating oscillator that's got the crystal oscillator that creates the big spark that is the pathway through the wormhole to God himself.
Are you getting Skyped?
Am I getting Skyped?
Yeah, is people trying to connect with you? Because I'm hearing like all kinds of dings and stuff.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, it's all right. It's all good.
How bizarre.
Somebody's saying that we're echoing. I don't know what to do about that. Maybe I'm just overdriven. Let me turn my mic down. Okay. Can you hear me still, JP?
Oh, yeah. You're coming through absolutely wall-to-wall, treetop-tall, and very, very clearly.
Okay, good. Well, I just turned my mic down. Maybe it was actually just overdriven, so I apologize to everyone. I'm not used to doing this. So I haven't had to keep my setting, so let me know if anybody else still hears any echoing. I don't have anything else on, so there shouldn't be any more echo, and I turned the microphone down, so it shouldn't be overdriven. So anyway, yeah.
I have to say that was a very interesting... My computer might actually shut down at any moment now, because I tried to shut it down to reboot it to get it going, and then suddenly it started working again. But basically, that was a very interesting outage, because suddenly Skype went down, you know, Revolution Radio went, and then we were talking for a while, and it was almost like these links were being picked off one by one. And then the chat room, I started talking to people in the chat room, and then that got closed down. That was very, very interesting. It was almost like individual processes within my computer were being shut down. So we're going to have a look at the system here and maybe actually move a lot more onto Ubuntu. So,
you know, I had that happen to me once. That bad. I was doing the show, and I went, and I was on, you know, being simulcast on Rev and, Rev Radio, as well as on, Wolf Spirit. And all of a sudden, everything got garbly. And then one by one, it was like watching people, like they were turning off their Skype. You know, one by one, people were no longer visible. They were showing as offline. And then, you know, I was typing in the chat box, and the chat box wasn't moving. No one was responding. You know, I tried to get back on the air. It was doing all kinds of weird stuff. It was absolutely bizarro. And I think it took me almost 25 minutes before I had to reboot my system, shut everything down, get back online, and then, you know, try to figure out, you know, what went wrong. And it still was never, that whole night, it was never good. The whole connection, it was just awful the whole night. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've got a backup, another, it's a Unix machine which can do the chat. So I think that seemed to remain online at the same time as this one going down offline. So it seemed very targeted. So maybe a reboot might be in order. Well done. Good attempt, guys. Very good attempt. Only took me 10 minutes to get back online. Thank you. And anyway, so I hope. Oh, I was also chopped off IRC. So let me just get back into IRC. Oh no, IRC won't start up because I've told my computer to shut down. So maybe I have to get IRC on a. I'll get that on my Android. That's great. I got a mobile phone that'll do IRC, so that's okay. So where were we? We were talking about Jerry, and
yes.
Your experience of Jerry. So what was did you get any new pieces of information from Jerry subsequent to your trip?
You know,
did things make more sense?
Well, you know, during the show that we did with him, and you know, the conversations that took place on that show as well as on air and off the air. You know, I remember briefly when I was over in Egypt, having a flashing thought that came in, especially when I had that one night experience where I was down in the tunnels underneath the Sphinx, and the information that he had talked about where he thought maybe the Ark of the Covenant may be. And I think it's very, very interesting that when I was down in those tunnels, so I'm not giving away anything that I'll actually be talking about tomorrow night. When I was down in that tunnel, and the being was speaking with us, you know, and just to refresh everyone's memory, I was in this H pattern. We went through a maze of tunnels, and then we kind of showed up in this, as it were, kind of a center place, where there'd been like this, almost like little podium stand. And if you imagine the middle bar there being the H, and then you have, you know, the both sides of the H, those are actually hallways. However, there was I don't know, I don't want to call it a fence, but there certainly was a screened off area where the center part was open. And now that I think about it, I wish I had looked down in there. I didn't look down in there. I knew that these hallways were just like, went on these tunnels, but they were very specifically, cut, you know, they were formed. It wasn't rough like a cave or something. So I hate actually calling them the tunnels because they looked like like an above ground structure, but only it was underground, which made me wonder of whether or not at one point it might have been above the ground. I'm not real sure, but I knew that from a distance, we were standing there and this being was talking to us and we got to see some things and some of the questions that I had got answered in that moment. But then the guide turned around and looked and I went, oh, it's not really panicking, but almost in a state of panic. Like, we must leave now. They're coming. So, you know, the tunnels down there are still being patrolled, for the lack of a better way of saying it. I remember thinking, I wonder if that's where some of the mysteries are that we haven't gotten to yet. Which one of them then crossed my mind was Jerry Cannon, which was, you know, we're talking about the orientation from the Sphinx, and because that's in front of the pyramid, sort of, right? And the Ark of the Covenant. So I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, that was, because I was actually in the Sphinx at that point. That's where those tunnels were coming from. And I was thinking, well, so he crossed my mind, but we did not get a chance to do any kind of exploration. There was no downtime for the group. It was a very specified thing, and Carrie did I have to say, as grueling as the trip was, she did a really marvelous job with choreographing what stops we needed to take and the method and the directions that we were going to bring us. We started out at the Great Pyramid, even though we didn't go there. That was where we started, and we went south in Egypt and then came back up and kind of went to the side there a little bit. So we hit a lot of things, went down by Answer and all that, and came back up. So I remember thinking that there was some kind of correlation with what the information was that Jerry picked up. Now, Jerry, I think, if I remember right, JP, he was talking about why he thought that the Ark of the Covenant was buried where it was based on some scientific research, I think, that had been done in some archaeological digs, if I'm not mistaken.
there was a combination of his vision where he related the story of he was a robber and he hired a bunch of other robbers to help him rob this treasure, which turns out to be the Ark of the Covenant, which is presumably is radioactive and caused everybody to go a little bit crazy because they eventually all killed each other in the middle of the desert, having buried this thing. And apparently, using ground-penetrating radar, there is something that is the appropriate size in this place where Jerry discovered, because he'd had visions, he was told about the place by psychics. They said, you're going to see this pyramid-shaped mountain, you're going to see a rock that looks like a tree, and all these things. And, you know, you've seen the photographs that Jerry has of all of these actual places that he was talked about. So he's got it down. He's got that place down to where,
yeah, he does.
Where it should be.
So, you know, I'm thinking that when I was down there in that tunnel underneath the Sphinx, honestly, JP, you know, that I wish that I could have explored. But we were, you know, all of us that was there in this, you know, night experience, we were taken down into the Sphinx by, you would call them an extraterrestrial. It was not a human at all. It was an extraterrestrial being that took us, down through the Sphinx. It was done in a very interesting way, because there was a portal there that was stealth technology, so to speak, was being used. So it was an illusion at the foot of the Sphinx, but there was an actual opening that isn't available to most people. They can't see it, so it's a portal, an opening, whatever you want to call it. And I've always believed there was those all over the world, that you could be standing right next to a portal or an opening and not know it, because it was being camouflaged with some form of technology. You could actually hear some of it, even if you couldn't see it. They were still working on the Sphinx when we got there. There was workmen out there, so there was a lot of things that we weren't actually able to get down close to, because of the work that they were doing in the area that we were at. So I don't think that he's wrong. And the other point I want to make here is that years back they were doing these specials. I want to get back to the specials that they did on TV about the Sphinx and about the pyramids and about how they were trying to debunk the idea that there was anything buried underneath the Sphinx or the pyramids, right? That there was nothing more than what we could see with our eyes. You know, that was the big debunker. And they took this supposed radar and looked down in there. And, of course, that was, you know, a little bit older technology than the GPR we're using now. But it still would have been able to see that. And, of course, the pictures were grainy at best. And so, you know, they were doctored. And I felt that. I was like, that's wrong. They know there's something under there. Then they brought this, I don't know, this, geologist in on this particular show that I was watching, and showing how there couldn't be anything buried underneath the Sphinx based on his findings and all this. It was a really big deal to prove there wasn't nothing on there. And I remember watching the show going, what a bunch of liars, and they all know they're lying. And, you know, and then I kind of just didn't think about it. And then when I was there, you know, and actually got to stand in that space where they had been filming and everything, I was like, really, what a bunch of liars.
Exactly.
There's so much more than what I really realize.
Exactly. And I know this, and this is why I want you on this show, because this is the cutting edge. This is the place where the truth can be the layer of plastic lies that have been laid on it is very, very cleverly placed. And the join is very, very cleverly disguised, but we can just put our nail under the edge and just gently lift it up, and it'll eventually start peeling off like a plastic sheet.
And, you know, they did another special trying to prove that the pyramids were built by the humans, and they used wood, logs, and big blocks, and they rolled these perfect stones into place, and that all the workers on the pyramid, to build the pyramid, lived in the area, and there was this little tiny area that they found next to the pyramid that they supposedly excavated that showed where an encampment may have been. Now, you know, I was listening to the verbiage that they used, and it was sketchy at best. But what it did do is it intimated at what they were trying to get people to kind of suck in and believe, was that if you weren't listening carefully to how it was worded, you would have said, oh, yeah, I get that. Yeah, I get that. I get where, you know, they could have lived there, and there was 10,000 men who lived on this, and, you know, this is where the bread was baked. Even though they had no physical evidence of any ovens to bake the bread, or any stones to grind the wheat, or any bowls to mix it in, or, you know, anything that would actually substantiate the outrageous claims that these quote-unquote scientists were making. But yet, you know, most people were not listening, and they weren't paying attention. They just allow this stuff from the TV or news media or whatever it is that they've got to infiltrate their mind, and they don't question it. They don't stop and think about, does that really seem logical that you would have 10,000 men, you know, living right here next to the pyramid, and there is no evidence of where they might have lived or how they would have actually ate or took care of, you know, their personal hygiene or anything like that, that there's no evidence of whatever it would have been that could have rolled these, you know, this tremendously high pyramid into place. There's no evidence of any of that. None. Yep. And the reason why you can't find any evidence is because it didn't happen that way.
That's right. See, this brings me to another little thing, because, you know, I'm well into pyramids and construction of these things as well. You know, I'm well into the angles and the trigonometry and the geometry and getting it. You know, because I like to build them, so you really have to know what you're talking about. Anyway, but one of the things, I have a friend. He's a lovely guy. And he's a plasterer, so he's a what we call a tradesman here in Britain. He's a craftsman, a master craftsman. He really knows his plaster, and he knows his aggregates. You know, he's got one of the only gunite machines in the country, which is this thing. If you go into a mine, you have to kind of dig the hole and spray concrete to hold the thing up, and that's what they use. They use this machine to blast concrete onto the walls, and it dries immediately because it just uses a tiny amount. Anyway, so this guy really knows his stuff about aggregates, and we were into conversation one night. This was about 5-6 years ago, and, you know, we're just talking about this thing, and he was telling me about the process that you can go through with lime. By heating up lime, you can create this powder. And lime is common to find. You know, you can find it in most land, you know, a little pocket of it. And you can grind it to a powder and transport it, mix it with water and sand, and it becomes a slurry. That means you can pour it, and then it will set. Once it's set, it then begins to absorb CO2 from the atmosphere. It literally sequesters CO2 and becomes limestone once again. Over thousands of years.
Fascinating.
Now, that's what he told me. And I said, hang on a second. I think I have a solution to the pyramid problem. And the pyramid problem is, how the heck, I shall say very cleanly, because we're on Revolution Radio, how the heck can you make stone blocks that you couldn't get a cigarette paper between? And the answer is simple. You pump it up as a liquid into shuttering. Once the shutters, shuttering is like a wood form, like a mold. Once you've finished with the wood mold, or once it's set a little bit, you can take the mold away and then smooth the outside surface. But you've got a perfect joint that you couldn't get a cigarette paper into. And it's poured. It's just like poured concrete. And there's another proof. If you were to take a core drill of these blocks and drill into them, you'll find that the microorganisms, the micro creatures, that when you have a piece of real limestone and you take a core, you drill into it, you have a very homogeneous, equal pudding of little curly insects and seashells, sea creatures, and all that stuff, because that's what it's made from. It's made from sea creature shells and things like that. But if you drill into the pyramid, as people have, they find that, and this is the effect of this, you know, if you think about what this process does, it creates this stuff that settles the bottom. It finds that all the sea creature shells are all at one end of the core, at the bottom. They're at the bottom of the block. So gravity has had an effect, and this stuff used to be liquid. It has settled out, and that's why it comes in these layers like that. What do you think of that?
So you're saying to me that the pyramids were made using this process that your friend is telling you about.
Yeah.
And they had forms, and they poured all of these stones.
That's right. And they don't need to be very... you don't need very much equipment to pump concrete up. Archimedes' spiral. Have you ever seen a chocolate fountain?
A what?
A chocolate fountain.
Oh, a chocolate fountain. Yes, I thought you said a chopped up fountain. I was like, I don't know what the heck is that. Okay, yes, I have seen a chocolate fountain.
Okay, we all know and love the chocolate fountain. Okay?
Yes.
It's a very ancient principle, and there is a spiral screw up the middle of it. And that pumps up the chocolate. That's all it does. It just moves the chocolate along the thing. Essentially, that very, very ancient principle is able to pump up concrete. You know, they must have had, could have made it out of wood. You know, you carve a tree, you carve a log, and you carve a spiral in the log, and then you maybe make a ceramic tube to pump the stuff up. But essentially, you can pump this stuff up quite an incline, put the nozzle into the thing, just the same way they make buildings these days. Just really big. And then the other night, I had an even better one. Because you know, like these South American ones? You seen these?
Yes.
South American temples? And they've got this kind of bulbous look to them. Haven't they?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, instead of having wooden shuttering, they had bags. That's how they made those. See?
I do.
How cool is that? This stuff.
You know, it's actually when I think about what you're saying, here's another point that I want to make to people. People talk about Egypt as, you know, there is no wood around there. Well, there is no wood now. And I've made that statement myself. And, you know, I've misspoken myself a few times. And so I want to correct that. That used to be extremely lush all around the pyramids. And there were trees everywhere. There are still trees in Egypt. They're just not as close to the pyramids as they used to be because the water has gone away. But it, you know, you can go out into the desert on the other side of Cairo, and when you get out to the desert, you see all of this stuff that used to be underwater laying on top of the sand. You know, the fossils and the bones and the fish and stuff like that, stuff that is formed underwater. So water used to be extremely readily available, which is what you need to use to make this limestone concrete block, right, that you're talking about.
Yep.
Trees would need to be made available for the equipment, and they were readily available. As a matter of fact, the hotel that we stayed in most of the time when we were... Whoops. I'll pick it up on the other side.
Stay tuned. Journeys with JP and Rebecca.
Sunlight in my growing, so little warmth I've felt before. It isn't hard to feel me glow. I watch the fire that grew so low.
To you, I feel
are clear to all from time.
Journeys with JP, and tonight Journeys with Rebecca, and we're standing in the pyramid, and apparently, you know, I've been sort of half watching the chat room because I've had to sort of look at the chat room on my mobile phone, and there's like microscopic little letters that I can't really see. Yes, after the first block was done and the mold removed, how's the next one? To it done so as not to leave a gap from the mould facing side. It's very possible to make gapless things by pouring and shuttering. It's a really simple process. I mean, the whole thing is, right, is assumptions that we're making that they can't use the technology that we have today. I believe that they're in advance of the technology that we have today, because certainly their ability to measure the earth and to make really, really accurate measurements and build with those accurate measurements, that was in advance of us, you know, it's in advance of our GPS system, which doesn't work anymore because the earth has expanded more than their calculations. Long story.
You know, here's what I want to say. We had a question that came in. Besides that one, by the way, that was from Howler. I think 5510 was the question. After the first block was removed, that question was from Howler 5510. But before that, we have another question that I wrote so that you could see it. And it says, according to the law of one, That's breeding material for those of you who are not familiar with the work. According to the Law of One, the pyramids were constructed through thought, through thought and frequency. Easy enough for somebody else to say. So, JP, I want to explore this idea here with you. There are these two very different concepts. One is from a, very logical, reasonable. It was poured from molds. It was made from limestone with the water, and based on what we know of the era when those pyramids would have been built, they would have access to wood. They would have access to water because it used to be, quite lush and beautiful. As a matter of fact, I don't think I finished my sentence. I have a tendency to do that. Is when I arrived at that hotel, there was pictures in this hotel of when that hotel was first built. And it was the one that faces the pyramid. As a matter of fact, when I sat in my hotel room, I had my curtains open. I could literally see the top of all of the pyramids from my room at this hotel. And in this hotel was pictures of how this was when it was first built. And right outside of where we were at that point was water and a tree-lined street. You wouldn't think you were in Egypt, the Egypt that we know now, that we see now. It was not dry and acrid like it is now. It was very lush and very green. Water ran freely. And it's all since, obviously, the landscaping, the environment has changed since that, even that hotel was built. And, there was water right out front, right there. So, that being said, logical and reasonable is your master plaster dude, the tradesman, talked about the idea of how this could be built using this methodology. Very logical, very reasonable, not something that's a far stretch. Then we have the other side of the coin, which is from the Law of One and others who have seen this as being perhaps these blocks being moved into place by thought, by frequency, by harmonics, by sound, maybe even water, floating blocks. That was another one of those things coming up. We have a tendency to dismiss more of those kind of ideas because that's not kind of a world that we all live in at this point. In this particular incarnation that we're all sharing, there's certain similarities that we're all sharing in regards to how this world functions. And one of them is that we're not seeing, people with their mind, getting together and moving blocks to build buildings. We're not seeing that. It's very physical, manual labor done with very, very much with the materials, whatever those materials are, and using machinery or what have you in order to accomplish the building of whatever it is. So I have to ask you, JP, how far-fetched is it to have these very perfectly formed blocks put into place in a very illogical way, which is by either frequency or thought or harmonics or sound? How inconceivable would that be for you or anyone else when it's not inconceivable that it could be built the way that your friend says it is, because he's looking at it from the viewpoint of what we have available to us now, not the potential of what could have been?
Okay. All right. So I'm just gonna really annoy people, right? Because
I love your annoyance.
Everything could be true. For instance, the process that my friend describes in purifying the lime, of obtaining the lime, the way that is done traditionally in Scotland is a certain process, right? And there's something that they've been doing, right? There are lime kilns. Now, I believe it's in the mountain range that leads towards Egypt, from that area is of the in the east, all the way down there, Yemen and all these countries. They used to have plenty of lime pits and lime kilns, so they could produce the stuff. Now, here's the thing. So, 10,000 years ago, 13,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago? When were these things made?
So who's, that's...
Here's the question, isn't it, though? Yeah, exactly. That's one question. But the other question is, who's to say that the materials were not processed using sound and thought, but assembled in this way, in the way that buildings are assembled these days? You know, you get lorries, they truck the concrete in, they mix it with local water, and voila, you have instant pudding. reference pudding there to Woody Allen's Sleeper, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, so I have to say that both of these things could be true.
Yeah.
You know, when I look at this, first of all, is I think that the pyramids are way older than what people think they are. Because, first of all, please understand, when they are dating these pyramids, they're looking at these lines on the side that are visible. Right? This is what that geologist was talking about. Pardon me. And I kind of carried that thought process. And I thought, okay, so what about all these other layers that are below the ground, that are still part of this pyramidical structure that's not being shown? How far above the ground was it? It may be underground now, but was it underground when it was constructed? Okay? So they're saying, well, the pyramids are X amount of years old. And depending on who you talk to, it can range anywhere from 3,000 years to 10,000 years. There's that much of a variance as to what they think or how old they think it is. What if it's older than that? What if it's not as old as that? You see, so we're getting into this conceptual idea. People want to buy into these real major facts. They want to say, this is the fact. These pyramids are only 3,000 years old. How do you date limestone?
Well, if you know, using this process, you could probably measure the amount of penetration of CO2 to see how far the CO2 has penetrated into the inner part of the block, and then
But you're only working with that structure which is above ground.
Yeah. Okay.
You
and
see,
here's the
it's
other
still
thing.
Not accurate.
Exactly, because the thing is not a pyramid; it's an octahedron.
Yeah, we don't know what it's shaped like now, do we? Because the truth has never come out.
Yeah. But as above, so below.
That's exactly right now, isn't it? So, how big is it? What is the real structure of it? So, let's take a look at the peoples of that time. We're going to carry this whole idea
Hang on a second. What time?
When the pyramids were built, when they say that the pyramids were built by the Egyptians.
Right. Okay.
Which,
so that
again,
means
we've
pharaohs.
Got a discrepancy. 3,000 years, 10,000 years, yeah.
Yeah, some dynasty or other.
Right.
Yeah.
So between that time frame, I can't be any more specific, neither can they. So we're going to go on a theory here that they're 10,000 years old based on what they say is history. Okay, so they're 10,000 years old. So during this time, we have a group of peoples that live there, the Egyptians that live there, and they're building these pyramidical structures, right? Now, who's the architect at this point? And my question has always been, if we, the human race, without intervention here, without extraterrestrial intervention or, you know, time travelers from the future, whatever you know, whatever that is, we're going to get into that a different time. We're not involved. This was literally just the pharaohs and the Egyptian people building these pyramids, which could be maybe something other than a pyramid because we don't know what's below it. Who drew up those plans? How did they get to be so precise with working with wood screws, so to speak, to pump water or this pudding out that you called into these molds? We don't build pyramids now. We don't build structures as extremely accurate as they did back 10,000 years ago. And yet we have computers, we have all these computer software programs that will design things, you know, to perfection, and we have all of these master trades people out there. We have all this equipment, blah, 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 and we can't do it today. Where's the logic in that, that it was built the way that your friend says it was built? It's just a question.
No, no. You see, my friend's not saying anything. I'm saying it is.
Oh, okay.
He was presenting the idea that limestone...
That it could have been.
But no, no, he wasn't even talking about the pyramids. He was just talking about this is what happens with when you do this with limestone. And I was thinking about pyramids, and then I thought, oh, well, then it's obvious how the pyramids were made, because you just make a mold, you know, and then... You know, you make a wooden mold, you pour your stuff in, you let it set a while, you move your mold, and so on, and you create the pyramid. And you, it's very easy to orient your wood. Once the stone is set, then it's hard to move. But if you can set your wood very accurately, and quite easily to a very accurate degree, and then you pour your mold and wow.
How do you get that? How do you get that accuracy?
You can use light. You know, you orient it to,
with what source of light? The source of light.
Well, I'm talking about, you know, you can orient it among stars and things like that. Now, here's what I'm saying, Rebecca. Yes, the guy's saying, all right, so it shouldn't violate the law of one. So it makes it that it was made, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to argue with Ra, who's some sort of...
No, listen, there's, you know, listen.
But I'm
and
just
I'm
saying...
And I'm not going to argue with Ra. I've had Carla McRuckert on my show, who was one of the original channelers, right?
Yeah,
And absolutely a beautiful soul. My God, this woman is a beautiful soul. And she gave us a lot. She dedicated her life to this material, and literally, and she still dedicated herself to it. And, you know, there could be some information in there, because she's still the filter. It still has to come through her that may not be 100% accurate. But again, whose timeline are we working off of? You know, that's when we get into that whole warp thing, you know, where we talk about different timelines and how they may have been parallel. But what I'm saying is I'm actually just saying this as an idea, not to refute what you're saying at all. It's not to be being debatable here. It's about the ridiculousness of what our society has tried to shove down our throats, that this could only be a certain age. It can only be built a certain way. And it's like, really, you know, we have to really open our scope here to that there could have been other technologies involved here that we aren't using. And of course, the big thing is, well, there's no proof of that. Well, there's no proof that there isn't either. You know, everybody wants proof. Well, you show me the proof that it couldn't be. They can't do that either on the other side of the coin, you know? So my idea here is that I believe that first of all, is that we've just begun to really, really explore how these things are done. We do know that there are pyramids around this world yet to be discovered. We know that the one in China, is that they've allowed it to be covered up with dirt and grass and all of that stuff so that nobody can access it. It's not been accessed. At least it's not accessible to the general public. We don't know. There could be tunnels and people are in and out of there all the time. Those that have that, you know, position of authority to do that, right? We don't really know what the dynamics are of some of these other pyramids. But again, my question has always been, and as a matter of fact, I had a conversation with one of my children years back. We were talking about the pyramids. And he was telling me, oh, well, they can build the pyramids now. And I said, really? Then why haven't they done it? And, you know, he kind of was stumped for a minute. And he said, well, why do we need to? And I said, well, you know, the human nature is that if it can be done, they're going to do it just because they can. It's never been replicated. None of these, especially the Great Pyramid, has never been replicated. There's a reason for that. If it was so easy to accomplish 10,000 years ago or however long it was, we would have easily recreated that now, because people have been exploring that for millennia, trying to figure out what makes it work. How do they get this oriented? How is that, you know, how is that pitch you know, all the geometry that goes into it. And kid you not that somebody would not try to build one. And yet no one's been able to do it. There is no other for me, for myself personally, this is my opinion, because, you know, I was in the pyramid, and there's other people that have been in the pyramid that will agree that, you know, that have that energy connection. They will agree that there's something very magical about it. Whether it be good magic or bad magic, whatever, it's very magical to be in there. It's unlike any other structure on this planet that we know of at this time. And it has a resonance that isn't created any other place. There's a reason for that. This place is a wealth of information. It's of no surprise to me, especially that now that we've moved into this, past this 2012, we're moving into a more enlightened arena, the masses are, that all of this fighting and everything that's going on now again in Egypt, and you can't get back in there. You know, they've closed it off. They closed it off before we got there. You know, there was a big surgence there to really prevent the people, anybody trying to get tourism down in that area, because they don't want it to be discovered. They don't want people to know what's really there. And you know, it hurts the economy for sure. But it's more about protecting the secrets of it. That's more important to some than it is to the majority of the people that would allow others to come into their beautiful country to explore these beautiful pyramids that cannot be found anywhere else on this planet as of this time. You see? So the pyramids themselves are a extremely important part, an integral part of what we really need to explore as a race, not just as one Egyptian or as, you know, anybody else. It's the human race needs to understand what the truth is. I would love definitive information on what does that structure look like below the ground. Is it as above, so below?
Well, I think
Sorry, I got off on a tangent.
That's all right. No. There's more seams that you contain, more seams of information, as you say, regarding this, because, you know, last night we were talking and somebody asked a question about the Bosnian pyramid. Now, I've had a guest. He's actually a local guy. He's the manager of a local Indian restaurant. And he's actually been out to the Bosnian pyramid doing some excavation work. And of course, I've had him on Journeys, on Revolution Radio, and his name is Hussein Ahmed. If you look back in the archives, you'll find it. There are tunnels under the Bosnian pyramid that are like roots of a tree, and the psychics tell us that this is like it connects with the water, with the aquifers underneath the ground, and water acts as an aerial. If you put some, you know, if you put a signal in water anywhere that touches that water will receive that signal. This is how you can bless the world with a glass of water. So the pyramid has these tunnels underneath. Now, it's also apparent that the Great Pyramid also had tunnels underneath. The pyramid in Bosnia wasn't recognized as a pyramid. They all thought it was just a big hill or a small mountain. But it's a pyramid. It's got sides. In England, in Wiltshire, in a place called Silbury Hill, I was standing there one day and I looked over it and I thought, wow, that's not a round thing. That's a square thing that's been rounded off. Silbury Hill, I believe, is a British pyramid. I believe that they all were placed around 10 to 13,000 years ago, if not further back. Maybe 50 or 100 or maybe a million years ago. In my humble. Now, I want to spiral this up a bit, Rebecca.
Absolutely.
There was a knowledge that there would be great earth changes 13,000 years ago. And if I was in a group that needed to project some knowledge into the future, so that it could be used at the time of the next crossing, how would I do that?
Well, you know, a dozen things come to mind, actually, JP. Some very simple, some a little bit more complex. I'm not quite sure where do you want me to take that. So maybe my question to you is, what would you do? How would you do it?
Well, some things last longer than others.
Paper. That's right.
Paper doesn't last very long. Parchment doesn't last very long. Papyrus lasts a little bit longer, but still will crumble after 1,000 years or so. Metal will corrode. Gold will remain. Lead will corrode. Stone will remain. Marble will wear smooth. Granite will remain. But it's really hard to cut granite unless you got a plasma cutter, which I believe they had in those days. Anyway.
Andonite.
Yeah. What did you say?
Andonite.
Andonite. What's that?
It is a stone that the carvings, and I talked about this before, that can be found in the museums. And these are the stones of what we would consider, what they consider to be the gods or the pharaohs. Depends on how you want to look at it. The oldest of the old, our guide was telling us the story about it, the oldest of the old statues were carved out of a stone called andonite. It's harder than granite. It's harder than diamond. And it's a very beautiful kind of blackish blue stone once it's carved. And in these carvings, it's about what the stature is in these first carvings of statues. And in all of them, they're holding a scepter and an ankh. And, you know, everybody has their theory. The theory of the guide was that the ankh was a technology that the gods used as a way to levitate and to do things with using sound and frequency. They had a certain way that they were placed upon a throne, how their hands were held, what position they were. Then the newer ones, the ones that were created after that, were created out of granite. And the understanding of our guide is that the original founders, if you will, of Egypt, the original pharaohs or gods, whatever you want to call them, were really gods. They were extraterrestrials with a lot of technology and power and abilities, and they mingled with humans and created a second generation, as it were. And the second generation was carved out of granite, and their stature wasn't quite as regal. Their hands were in different positions. They were sitting in different positions. You began to see some of them without the scepter or without the ankh. And then you have the third generation, which was carved from a different kind of a granite, substandard, then that granite, and then, you know, it goes on from there. And he's talking about the three, he calls them the three generations. Obviously, it was actually longer periods, but to make it simplified, it was three generations. And andonite is, again, is harder than granite, is harder than diamond. And yet, these are, and the interesting, most interesting thing about the andonite, statues is that the symmetry of the beings is a state of perfection. You know, if you look at the human face, nobody's eyes are the same size from the left side to the right side. The nose structure is different from each side. The mouth is slightly different from each side. We vary from the right side to the left side. There's no human beings that have this perfect symmetry. No matter what their facial structure is, they just don't have perfect symmetry. However, the first statues, and some of them were huge, by the way, I mean, you know, 30 feet tall, 20 feet tall, perfect symmetry. Everything about them was perfect. Perfect leg structure, toe structure, finger structure, everything was perfect. Nothing was different from the left side to the right side. You get into the granite, and then we begin to see the symmetry not quite as perfect. And then you get into the third generation, and it's less perfect than before. So there was a definite, I guess, watering down, if you will. They believe that there was a point in time when the original gods, or pharaohs, whatever you wish to call them, left the building. They literally left this planet. And they left the ones that we now call the pharaohs were the ones that were part of the bloodline, I guess, the original bloodlines of the state of perfection gods that supposedly were the ones that were the builders of the pyramids, or simply the architect or the engineers or the, you know, the brains of it all, the brain children. So, yeah. So, you know, when you're talking about that, there's also the whole andonite thing. So you're talking about how do you preserve information. You preserve it. A lot of it is in stone, and they did it for a reason. It's because, and it also depended on where the stone was at, whether the bee would be sheltered or not, if it was going to be indoors or outdoors. And so, yeah, stone would be a way to certainly carry messages into the future. The only issue with that, is if you're doing it in a language that's native to you, is it native to the people that are going to find it in the future?
Well, that's the thing. And the other thing about the Egyptian pyramids is that they haven't found any hieroglyphs inside it. It wasn't like a modern language. There's no writing much inside it. There's a bit of stuff. I think it was like stuff that was left behind by some investigators several centuries later. Well, here's the thing, right? I'm not saying that magic wasn't used to put this thing together. I'm just saying that maybe magic as a part of the tool system of the people, of the time, you know, why, you know, you don't have to use, here's an example, the astronauts, NASA spent thousands, millions, trying to develop a pen that would write any way up. You know, they developed a pen that had a little spring-loaded heart that pushed the ink towards the nib, just so that it would, this pen would write in space, and they spent billions on it. And the Russians, they used a pencil.
No, that was a no-brainer.
So, what I'm saying is that people will see the sensible and the most straightforward way of doing something. People don't tend to do things arse upwards. You know, they'll do it. People don't tend to do things the hard way, as a lot of the explanations of these so-called archaeologists kind of try to manipulate the historical past people into.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah, they use blocks of wood. Really? You try putting 30 tons on a block of wood. It's not a roller anymore. It's a pancake.
It splinters.
Yeah. So perhaps if they're moving large blocks of cut rock like they would, I mean, there was granite slabs in there. and they must have gotten those in somehow. And they could, what I've heard of many accounts where you can move huge blocks of stone using frequency. And the Tibetans have done it, and Lied Skalnin did it. And if you're constructing your place on one of these node points, which is where I'm going to with this, you're constructing your thing on one of these node points, building something is easier. And who knows, they may well have built it from the top block downwards.
You know, we don't know. I mean, you know, we look at everything the way that we would do it now, right? We do. But that doesn't mean that's the way that it was done. We arrived to the way that we do things based on past repetitive processes from other people, right? Very few things in this world are arrived at independently and totally separately, and certainly altogether different than the way something has been done previous to that. Usually we have to have a point of reference in order to, you know, like if I want to use a hammer and a nail, and I'd never seen it used before, I wouldn't know what to do with it. So I have to have a point of reference. Somebody show me what to do with this nail and what do I do with the hammer. Otherwise it just becomes a duh moment for you, right? Okay, I got this thing and this thing. What the hell am I supposed to do with it? All right? So when you talk about these node points, I kind of want to get back to that. I'm just kind of scattering around here a little bit because they're like yakking at me. These power points, you know, they're all over. They're everywhere. There's just millions of them, literally scattered across this globe, both above ground and below ground, in the water, you know, on top of the water. Most of them, we don't perceive them because most people are not energetically sensitive that way. We don't sense them. We don't feel them. We don't see them. Because they are subtle. They're extremely subtle. They're because it's part of nature. And most of us do not live in that kind of frame of existence, in that understanding of when you get into an energetic space like that, that you can move mountains. There's a lot of things that you can do, you know, magically speaking, because the energy assists it in the process. And it's learning how to tap into that energetic in that, PowerPoint, whatever that is, in order to utilize it to the best of its ability.
So, PowerPoints, and we're not talking lame presentations, PowerPoints all around the earth. You know, right up in the north of Scotland, there's on that map, you know, that sort of really grainy kind of map with all those triangles saying this is the world world grid, and you know, there's one right up in the north of Scotland, and it's in a completely uninhabited area. There's nothing going on there. It's really odd, and I'm wondering if that, when the earth expands, is going to move. And it's probably going to move closer to where I am just now, because this is it's about 100 miles away.
Well, you know, these places that are uninhabited now doesn't mean they were uninhabited, you know, 10,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, a million years ago, right? So just because they're not inhabited now, and I will tell you, I keep having these visions. There's two visions that I keep having, and they're repetitive. And they've been, it's almost like, you know, I can't wait to discover it, because it's like one of those mysteries that, you know, kind of eat at you after a while. You're like, I've really got to figure out what these things are, right? Where are they? And there's two places on this planet that my attention keeps being drawn to. And I cannot geographically even begin to tell you where they're at. I just can see them from just above the level of the tree lines, right? And I'm looking down. One of them is an extremely heavily foliaged area. I mean, the density of the forest alone is a preventative for, you know, most anybody to go into it. But there is a huge structure there somewhere that has got a wealth and ton of information, just huge. And I feel like there is a ton of water in the bottom of it. So it's been flooded, or it's on a low, you know, the water table is very high there so that it comes up into the structure. The other one, by the way, is partially exposed. But it again, a very remote area of this world. And it's partially exposed, and yet there is no civilizations around there. So again, it reminds me of what you were just talking about there, and you know, that there's this place that's not too far from you that feels like it's a PowerPoint. Well, it probably is, because there's a lot of those places that we have, I still think about Canada and Alaska and all those places. You know, most of Canada, other than the east and west coasts of them, is just nobody lives there. What is there? And there's, that's true of the northern parts of the United States in the middle, and of the northern part of the middle of the United States. There is a ton of stuff there, but nobody lives there. It's so sparsely populated that we wouldn't necessarily know that there was something like that, because we're not looking there, because it's not where we're looking. But if you begin to look around, and you begin to open those antennas, much like you, JP, have done, you can sense these places, and you can begin to tap into these. You know, it's a very rhythmic energy. It's very soothing. It's very powerful. It's not overwhelming in the least, because it's a natural energetic that you can tap into. You know, the sheathing that the Ilium have talked about. Much of the natural grid now is being exposed again. So the natural grid has become more and more available to the people, and that's the other portion of what's going on over there in Egypt too with these pyramids, is that people are beginning to understand there is something underneath. They found these tunnels and pyramids. Now you don't hear anything about it. All you hear now is about the fighting and the, you know, the unrest, because they don't want you looking at who we are, where we come from, who's been here, how were those pyramids built, a wealth of information.
It's a very interesting puzzle, and it's to do with, I mean, you've got something to do with it, you see, and this is why I'm quizzing you in this way. And I'm really pleased that you kind of coming along this same kind of level of reasoning.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this is great. First of all, here's my ankh, by the way, and it sounds like this. And the kind of whistling sound in the back is a kettle that I have running. So.
Uh-huh. The tea kettle.
But the, yeah, that's a brass unk that I have, so I've got all these kind of connections. Let me just, just grabbing the kettle by the throat. We don't have any water today. I woke up this morning, watered my tomato plants, and it was just like a little kind of dribble, and it's dried up. It's just like, oh my god, this is the end. I thought we were on a well, but the farmer hasn't found out. But there's an obvious leak somewhere, but he hasn't found out where the leak is yet. Anyway, meanwhile, we were talking about tunnels under the pyramids, and one of the connections is that the Bosnian pyramid has these tunnels, and they say they're flooded. I don't think they're flooded. I think they're deliberately full of water, because they act as conduits for the energy, and they're like the roots of this thing, of this being. And I believe that the Nile used to be there, and the pyramid used to be well connected with the Nile, and that's why the whole thing is fine, you know. That, and when the Nile started to move, then probably as the planet expanded, the center of the place where the aquifer was moved, and the Great Pyramid didn't have so much influence over the Earth anymore.
You know, it is a rite of passage, if you want to call it that. It's a rite of passage for sure, where the lessening degree of its influence, but it still has a greater influence in some ways, because we need to understand it more fully than what we have. We need to understand it because there are others, there are other structures out there that have these magnanimous, abilities. They will be giving us things that we have yet to explore yet as a race, and we need to understand where we come from. We don't need to just focus all of our time on it, because if you're always in the past, then you're not going forward. But what we need to do is we need to find out where we come from. Every piece of information that we get, we need to put it in our pocket. We need to take the step forward and look back and see if there's anything else that we can pull out of there, and just keep taking that and just, you know, intertwining the old with the new, because there is something to be said about that. And, you know, we are in a new energetic. You and I talk about it. You've talked about it. And these new energetics are supporting way different ideas. And I still believe that this whole idea behind the pyramid, and I do know, I can tell you, is that I don't know if it'll be in my physical life cycle while I'm here, but I do know that the pyramid and all of the secrets of the pyramid at some point will be known. Again, whether it be in this life cycle or some other life cycle, I don't know. But it will be known. It will be reconstructed or brought forward. There'll be a lot of people that will be present, physically present at that time. There will be a huge trigger mechanism, a floodgate, if you will. And many people are already beginning to experience some of this, where they are making connections to some of these places on Earth. Some are more obscure than others. It doesn't have to be the Great Pyramid. I think everyone thinks that if you aren't connected to the Great Pyramid, that somehow that's lesser than, and that couldn't be further from the truth. There are lots and lots of power points and lots of power places. Some of them have yet to be discovered, and that doesn't make them less powerful or less valuable to humanity. It just makes them undiscovered yet. And so that's really what we need to get to, is we really need to get to what is this all about. All of this, you know, secrecy that we've had throughout these years. And, you know, I have had, unfortunately, a few debates with a few of people that I've had on the show, JP, about that, you know, this is for the benefit of mankind, that we don't know the truth. Well, if we'd been told the truth the whole time coming into this, then we wouldn't even be here having this kind of dialogue. This whole world would be a whole different operating system than what we're operating out of now, and what people are coming to the point of going, you know, we really would like to know how this is done. You know, that doesn't, it doesn't do anything except for to give to the people, give to the majority of the people, those who want the information, you know, an expanded view of who they are and where they come from, instead of a very secluded and harbored lifestyle. I mean, we're like our governments are these, you know, overbearing parents that want to protect you from everything. That's what they tell you, but what they really want to do is don't want you to get the information, because they want to keep it for themselves. So, you know, at some point that will flip-flop, that will change. We're in the process of those changes. And I think that's really some of why we have maybe bypassed some of the Earth changes, is because there has been a raising of consciousness. This new energetics, if you noticed, right about 6 months before the whole December 21st, 2012, people stopped talking about the apocalypse and started beginning to really, in earnest, begin to talk about that this was a transition, not an apocalypse.
And, well, people start talking about what they want rather than all the stuff that they don't want, which is better. You know, it's better to change something than complain about it. And, you know, people are realizing that's the way to do it. You know, shut up about it. Just do the new thing. Do something better.
Yeah. So here's a question. Isn't it true that they really don't want further inquiry into the ancient library in Alexandria and that the former temple complex is in Alexandria? We did not have the best of time in Alexandria getting to any of that information. So I do believe that that's an accurate statement, that there's been a lot of damage there. Some of it may not even be retrievable, some of the information in the library. But there still is enough of that information out there. There's also people who are way better at some of this stuff than I am that can actually tell you, because that's their life mission, where some of these more hidden treasures are that would be accessible to the humans if you can get the groups of people together, to band together, to be able to either find the money to do it or, you know, to get together to actually retrieve it without doing harm to those who are retrieving the information. We all see what that's like when you tell the truth or you want to expose the truth in our societies as it stands, you know, at this time, temporarily anyway, truth seekers and truth sayers are usually the ones that are hung out to dry. And so, you know, I kind of want to leave people with this thought. You know, whether you agree with Snowden or Julian Assange, doesn't matter. But please understand that they're just sharing the truth. And they're being punished and called all kinds of names, and stories are being built around, you know, their terribleness that they have done, all in the sake of, you know, what people are terming national security. Well, you know, we don't really know what they're doing because, you know, the idea of national security is what? We don't even know what that is. You know, we do know that there's a lot of really, really bad things that are happening to really, really good people. But I would tell people is don't let that be fearful to you. Always seek the truth. Because only, honestly, and it, you know, it sounds very cliche, and it is, the truth will set you free. It will set humanity free. And it begins then with a whole different world. We now is not the time to curl up and get frightened or to run away. Now is the time for people to band together and say, we really want the truth. And we will have the truth, because that is our birthright to be here, is the truth.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what is going on right now is the apocalypse. The apocalypse means the uncovering. The uncovering means, you know, exactly as I was talking about before, that thin film of, I'm trying to remember the name. I don't know. You know, in America, in the 1960s and 70s, you could buy this material, a thin film, and it would have different textures on it. Some had a funky design and some of it like a wood design. And you could get it on a roll and it had a sticky back, kind of PVC plastic kind of thing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm.
People stick these things on their wheelie bins to make them look prettier. But it's just a thin film, a veneer of plastic with an image on it. And that's what we've been subject to. And now we're peeling the label off that jar, and we're discovering the jar is actually much older. I want to go right out here. I want to go right out into the cosmos here with what I'm going to say, right? I believe that the pyramids were built more than 10,000 years ago. Yes.
Agreed.
And it's very likely that they were used highly advanced techniques by non-human terrestrials or non-terrestrial humans, sorry.
Very good.
Who might not be our size. In fact, from what I understand, the galactic average size is bigger than the human. You know, we're quite wee. Quite small and cute, and especially the females. Anyway, the pyramid was like Wardenclyffe Tower. Tesla created this tower, which could have transmitted energy throughout the whole planet for free, so that, you know, you just, instead of having a your socket where you plug something in, you just have a little antenna on it, and it would pick up the energy. You could drive around in a car, and it formed a potential between the sky and the earth, and all you needed was to tune into the frequency, and you had power, and you could do this. And I believe that that's what the pyramid used to do, and it connected with the water to ground it. It's like an earthing rod, a grounding rod. And then there's this plasma generator that is inside the pyramid, and that's creating the potential difference between the earth and the sky. So that's the end of the thing. Rebecca Jernigan, thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. And
tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night, 7 to 9 p.m. right here on Wolf Spirit Radio. Please do join me and Alpha Ron, Sean Clark, and it'll be fabulous. And JP, I look forward to having you on the show. We'll continue this conversation. Thank you all for being here.
Excellent. Good night.